Right, so it's only been a few days since my last podcast. I had therapy yesterday, and I did say on the previous podcast that I have deleted that my therapist is actually an energy worker. I do Reiki myself. I know it's not for everyone, so I'm not going to rant on about it, but that kind of therapy works for me, and it did help. Quetiapine seems to be settling in all right. I slept properly last night. Yesterday I woke up at 7 o'clock, was in bed by 12 though. So, of course, I had a meeting with someone today. But of course, today was the day I struggled to get out of bed. But I did it and I got there on time, before the guy actually. And it was an interesting meeting, and it's funny actually, well, it's not funny, but he told me about a story, and I can't remember what the guy's name was, but he was a sociologist, and this was back in like the 60s, late 60s, and the guy went in to talk to people in the proper old school style asylums. Now, he came across this case and he was talking to someone and he was just having just a normal conversation. You know, like a to and fro. He was sat on the floor, the guy was sat on the floor opposite him. There wasn't enough room on the bed for both of them. And then the shutter on the door opened and the man stood up and he started dancing around, standing on one leg and just sort of, you know, I mean, I suppose what you'd expect typically crazy to be, which obviously I know and I hope you know doesn't actually exist these days. People do have episodes, but it's not that people are crazy. It's just that people are sometimes ill, or, you know, brain chemicals are out of whack, or, you know, they've been through shit. It's always something. Anyway, so the doctors came in, they examined him, and he said it was six of them, and he carried on doing what he was doing, and then they left, and he sat back down and continued the normal conversation. And the sociologist was like, "What? Why did you do that?" He said, "Well, if I'm normal, no one comes in to see me." And that just hit me, you know, like how social interaction can really change someone's level of wellness. I mean, if you think about that, you know, you've got people sort of even in their 60s, 70s now, that were admitted to asylums like that at the age of 10 to 15, whatever, and don't come out until they're 50. We got onto this subject because we were talking about labels. You know, I'm not one. Like, for me, my diagnosis, all of them, have been a relief because I have known that the approach I'm taking is the correct one. Now, he said he doesn't agree with medication, and I don't know if it was, I did take offence to that. He said, "It's okay for you to agree with it." And I was a bit like, but, you know, each to their own at the end of the day. I'm sure there's people out there without medication, but I honestly don't see, personally, how something like bipolar or schizophrenia can not be managed with medication. I mean, look at depression. There's loads of natural remedies and such, but at the end of the day, antidepressants, you know, help with people with clinical depression, major depressive disorder. They help in bipolar depression when they're prescribed alongside mood stabilizers. When they're on their own, they can trigger mania potentially. So alongside mood stabilizers to help with depression. And I know personally that medication has made a huge difference to my life. You know, it's not that, I mean, yeah, I've put the work in as well. I I had a year of therapy back in 2010. It started, or was it 2009? I think it was 2010. And then it finished in March 2011. And I just destabilised again and ended up in A&E. That's a whole other podcast. But, you know, I did a lot of the work myself. But back to the social point. Because we were talking about a volunteer service. Now, the mentoring service I thought that they had, this is Mind Charity, they don't actually offer, but it's peer support work. Now, there are three different types. You can work the open access, which has basically nearly been eradicated, which was like a social area, and you know, the three places in my borough had like pool tables and like games and stuff that people could interact with. Now, the place I go to, my local one, doesn't really have open access, because the time I arrived for the appointment, I went to sit in the main area where open access would be, and there was no one there. You know, it's quite sad, really, because everything's been taken away. It's like, well, if one person goes and no one else does, then it's going to put other people off going, isn't it? There's another way, which is running a peer support group. First, you have to work with particular people in various support groups, so you learn different styles. And he said the thing is that I don't, because he runs like across the borough, and the whole peer support program. And he said, I don't advertise, you know, I don't put out there that we need this, this and this. It's what people's hobbies are, what people excel at, what they feel confident enough to lead a group with, you know, which I'm interested in. But there's also a befriending service for people who, for example, can't leave the house. Or he told me an example of a woman with OCD. Now, she impulsively buys things. She said she bought 27 pairs of shoes in one day, so she then sells them on eBay. But he said that she, on her own with her OCD, she'll spend 7 hours, you know, I mean, this is a rough count, this is a second hand story, do you know what I mean? It's not a primary evidence. But yeah, let's just say 6-7 hours looking through eBay and working out the exact cost that this denim, for example, where he used a denim jacket as an example. Now, the person that's gone there has not had any experience with using eBay. So the person who has OCD is teaching the other one how to use eBay. And then the person the volunteer is going, look, you know, we've looked at 3 or 4. We can put it up on this price. So they're learning from each other. And I said to him about, you know, my inability to leave the house and how sometimes it, you know, even now it can be quite prominent depending on my mood state, and state of mind, etc. And he said, oh, you know, in the future, once, you know, you've done XYZ, that, you know, you could help someone in a similar situation, where you could, you know, you can talk to them and relate to them, and I can talk to them and relate to them. And, you know, he's not one for recognising diagnosis. He said one girl came in and into a meeting similar today and was like, right, I'm bipolar. And he was like, you know, like that's an identity. And the thing is that, you know, he obviously, each to their own, fair enough, that's his opinion. But personally, I think, you know, a bipolar support group, the woman who runs it said they did a thing on the Bipolar UK page where they did, like, I'm a mum, I'm this, I have bipolar. Now, I consider all of them part of my personality, part of who I am, because they're part of my history. I mean, I think about the periods of mania. I was just talking to someone on Twitter under my other podcast's Twitter account, and I've completely forgot what I was talking about. No, I'm gonna have to stop and listen through. Okay, I honestly can't think what I was going to say. However, the point is that listening back through that 10 minutes podcast, I have completely missed particular points, and I hope that it's not too confusing to people. Anyway, back to this social inclusion. And so I am starting by shadowing and supporting people who run peer support groups. Now, there's a difference between Recovery College and peer support groups. Peer support groups are run weekly. They, have regulars, they have new comers, people that come once a month or when they're able. And I mean, the point of the whole diagnosis thing, I think he was trying to put across, was that you're not here to talk about people's diagnosis. You're here to talk to people, talk to them, talk about who they are, what they're doing, what they're interested in, and all that kind of thing. And I agree to that extent. I do. I agree with that philosophy that, they have people generally have people that they talk about their diagnosis with and their issues, and that, whether it's something like bipolar support group or psychiatrists, GPs, community psychiatric nurses, I think I've said support workers, care coordinators, and all that kind of thing. But this is to offer an opportunity for people to just be people. And I think about how far mental health recovery has come since the old asylums closed down. And I think about how much the government does, like funds, and then how much things like Mind Charity do. Now, he said the befriending service is partially for people who have been, have been discharged from hospital, and that's it. There's no further care, there's no, it can be lonely and very isolating, and it's really easy to fall into the pattern of isolating yourself. And I just think, well, wow, if can you I can't imagine. I've got an amazing support group. I genuinely have. They try to give me as much time as possible, but someone who'd been in my situation and understood could relate at least to what was going on, like just taking me to the park for an hour. Or, he said they do all sorts, shopping, walking dogs, there's all kinds of people that do the charity work. I think it was a lawyer from the city that takes a day off now to come and do the befriending service. And I just think, wow, the social aspect of recovery is huge, and I don't think I realised how huge it was until A, I started going to the groups and Recovery College, and B, today. He put a lot of things into perspective. We didn't agree on a lot of things, however, he explained things in layman's terms and put across to me the importance of this kind of thing. Like for example, there's a the art group, and the facilitator used to be a teacher, so it's not necessarily structured like class, but she'll go around and she'll ask everyone individually, you know, how are you, what are you working on, blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, I'll go on to the next bit later, but she said, you know, it's a good idea to, I go around and just, you know, just check in with people if I haven't seen them for a little while, see what's going on, just even if it's a general, how are you, what, you know, what you've been up to, that kind of thing. It is the basic social interaction. And I think about my old opinion of small talk is unnecessary. Now, it isn't, is it? It's, to some people, it is the most important thing, where someone actually gives a shit. You know, you don't volunteer for Mind and not give a shit. You don't put your time aside like that, whether you're working or you're struggling with your own recovery or, you know, whatever situation you're in. You don't do that. You don't pay, you don't get paid to do that. You don't do it out of whatever reasons. It needs to be that you actually want to make a difference to people's or a person's life. And, you know, I don't know. Good thing is that I can handle small talk. I am, I have realised how much of a sociable person I am, or was when I was younger, and it is actually a part of who I am, you know, in the last few months, and how I find it easy to be able to talk to people on all kinds of levels. Like my best friend's partner, he's very deep, and the two conversations we've had have been straight into the depths of things, and he, you know, his mind is amazing and I love it. But I can also go and have a laugh with my best mate, or you know, talk about random things with my cousin. And I think it's having that interaction. I don't know, I think some people as well, it's a matter of some people will hit the point where they're well enough to go back to work. Some people won't, but some people will. And having that social anxiety of not being able to just have a basic conversation with someone that you don't know really hinders that. You know, I spent the majority of last year believing that was it. That I would probably get a job at a supermarket or something a couple of days a week, doing something, working with, you know, and then do my art and such, and you know, try and have that as a sideline. And now I see so much more of a future available, and that wouldn't have happened without Mind, you know. And I just think, well, whichever way it takes me is the way it takes me, and this is something new that I have never done before. And I really do think that I can contribute to, again, people's or a person's life. I think the befriending service, it would benefit them, where I have had 10 years, you know, it has been a mental health career, and I've been through so many different doctors and so many different psychiatrists and psychologists, and you know, what forms therapy is best, and then not hitting that therapy for whatever reason, and you know, the anticipation of life moving forward and not believing that it would be anytime soon. Now, I still know and understand personally that it will take a while, but during that period, it doesn't mean that I can't make a difference to someone else's life. And the fact that I can see a future, will that, you know, the fact that I was in that place and I have now moved forward to this place. You know, I'm not saying I don't struggle, of course I do. My sleep is out of whack, but if whack were a routine, there is no whack. I am managing to bring my routine in a bit more. I have been in bed by one, two nights in a row. I was in bed by midnight the first night, and the second night I kind of lost track of time, but I was in bed by 12:45. And I've been I listen to sleep meditations. Again, not for everyone, but I find that I do things like letting go of negativity, letting go of past relationships. You know, I mean relationships in general. I don't mean just romantic relationships. I'm talking about friendships, family, relations, all that kind of thing. And, you know, confidence and all that kind of thing. And sometimes I do affirmations. It's funny because I used to think affirmations were just absolutely pointless. Yet now, here I am. And for me, I found that to be quite relevant in life. Where before, when I was younger, I was really anti-medication. And now, I'm really pro-medication. Of course, it's up to the person whether they want to be medicated or not. But it is a recommendation for me for certain aspects. Certain severe mental health disorders. I did quotation marks there. Again, like schizophrenia and bipolar. And then there's the personality disorders. And major depressive disorder. And, you know, it's a whole range of things. I think that, sorry, I forgot what I was talking about again. I think that personally medication can, as an option, can really help. Now, I also use alternative things. I take supplements. I take, you know, I try to keep a balanced diet. I have lots of salad, lots of fruit, high protein. My body really seems to appreciate protein. I don't really have a lot of carbs, not through choice, but sometimes I'm just not hungry. In the daytime, I'll start off with an apple and a banana for breakfast with my coffee and my meds. But then, you know, if I've had a long day, I might whack a bowl of porridge in there. But if not, then it's dinner. And then I have a protein shake with some fruit and a little bit of dark chocolate because I love dark chocolate. But I only have a little bit. But it all contributes, you know, it all contributes. It's the social interaction where I was struggling over the weekend and then I was still active. I was still doing stuff around the house or trying to at least. I think one day I lost myself in art, which, yeah, some shit didn't get done, but I'm not just sitting there. You know, listening to podcasts and music and just finishing a piece that I've been working on because I have a problem finishing pieces. I start things and then I don't finish them. So I'm really trying to finish them, put them aside, and then start a new one. I think I've said before, again, on the things that podcasts I've deleted, that I usually have several projects going at once. You know, I'm a very creative person. That's really helped. And there's just, you know, I believe that you have to take an holistic approach to mental wellness, and that's across the board. Whether you suffer from depression, but are able to function, you know, it's the whole thing. It's social interaction, exercise, or what exercise you can manage, depending on, you know, your physical ability and such, or physical disorders, creativity. Being out and about, fresh air, medication, supplements, diet, routine, all kinds of stuff like that. And, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say people with just a diagnosis of depression, because it's all relative at the end of the day. You know, like my best friend, she was going through life, and she had a nervous breakdown. And now she gets it a bit more. But the point is that when you've led a relatively normal life and then all of a sudden a breakdown hits, I can't imagine what that's like, because I've always been this way. In several formats, you know, whether it's been flashbacks, mania, depressive episodes, reaction to abandonment issues, impulsive reactions. But I've always been this way. I don't know any other way than the way I've been. So it can only get better. Now, a big hats off to my best friend. It happened, and you know, a lot of her friends aren't really equipped or haven't had the experience in mental health. And I was shortly out of hospital, and both of us had been having relationship issues, and we just spent like 2-3 months together, just kind of, you know, I was sitting with her when she was just falling apart, and it gave me someone to be with, someone that I trust. We both of us say that life brought us together at the right time, because actually when I was in her house, I found out that my dad had terminal cancer. Her mum died of cancer when she was 22, but she already had a child at that time. So, you know, she dealt with it and she moved on. And I think the breakdown was just, some shit happened and it was just the final straw, is how she explains it. But in the 2 years following, she left her job that she wasn't happy in. She found a job and a company that she just fits perfectly into. She's so much happier. She gets fulfillment from her job, and she sees a lot of people, which is just, she's like probably the most sociable person I know. She does need downtime, but I suppose the polar opposite to what I was. I'm kind of middle ground now. So yeah, I can't imagine what that must have felt like. Those new kind of feelings, and and people that are struggling in everyday life and have to keep their shit together, but are still waking up in the morning struggling to get out of bed because of their depression. And people don't recognise it. Oh, you know, you look well, you know, you must be fine. You know, you're going out, you must be fine. In fact, my mum suffered with depression pretty much most of her life. She said to me she didn't realise at the time, and then she kind of came about to it. And her best friend at the time said to her, you don't have depression, you know, you get up every day, you go out, you do this, you do that. And then she said to me, but I had three kids, you know, I had three kids, I had to run the house, and then I got a job, and, you know, these things are things I had to do. And I think, you know, I mean, I don't understand the obligation of having children. I understand it to the point where I have gone through life and not had children, mainly because, you know, I just don't think I'm well enough to look after a child on my own. I'm good at interacting with other people's kids. And that's not because I don't have to take them home. It's because, I don't know, I've just heard from people how isolating it can be when you have a young child. And I, you know, I wouldn't want to risk going downhill. Plus, medication when you're pregnant, wouldn't want to risk baby's health. There's not enough studies been done on different kinds of medication that are safe. They say this is safe and this is safe, but is it? You know, these drugs have only been around some 10-15 years, and how can you be sure that something's okay without proper research? You know, like these kids becoming adults. So, yeah, I understand it to the point where it's a huge responsibility, and it's something that you have to do. I have read, heard stories, and witnessed cases where the parents couldn't get out of bed, and for various reasons, and the child was left to their own devices. Now, I think when they're a bit older, it's like, again, I was talking to her best friend. She said when her son was like 4 or 5, he would get his own breakfast. He was quite, he wanted to be independent, you know. And she'd be in bed, but she'd be open, you know. If he wanted something, he'd run up and go, blah, 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 blah. And she'd talk to him and respond to him. And then when it was time, she would get up, not late, late. But, you know, some kids wake up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think, I should imagine, when you've been at work all week and dealing with a 5-year-old, that you come Saturday morning and you just want to fucking stay in bed, even if it's till 9 o'clock. You know, if you've been getting up at 6, 7, that's got to be an incredible lay-in. So, you know, you still had that interaction. And she still got up and she was a parent for a day. But I'm talking about people that have left their kids alone all day long to fend for themselves. And I'm not saying that kids shouldn't learn to be independent. However, you know, they need companionship. It's lonely. I spent a lot of years in my bedroom on my own. My brothers were 4 and 6 years older than me, so they were doing stuff that I wasn't allowed to do, like going out, seeing their mates, going around their mates' house till late. And I spent the majority of my childhood and my teen years in my room, on my own. And, I mean, I suppose that kind of set me up well for appreciating my own company. I didn't really understand it at the time. And I've been through periods where it's just like, you know, I don't want to be alone, but I have to be alone, you know. And I haven't kind of gone through, I've managed to keep a balance at the moment. But then you've got, you know, you've had children when you are not able to look after yourself. So children end up becoming carers. And it's different for different situations, and I feel like I'm just sat here judging people in that situation, and it is different for different people. One of my other friends, her mum didn't become ill until she was 12, and that's when she started caring for her, around school, around various obligations. And that wasn't expected. You know, some people have MS, some people... It's different situations, and I'm not saying that people with mental health disorders shouldn't have children. I just personally, in my opinion, you know, I'm not saying everyone has to relate to it. In my opinion, I think I do think, you know, I would love to have had children, but it wouldn't have been right and it wouldn't have been fair to have my own children, because I wouldn't have been able to care for them properly. And, you know, I am late 30s now, and I'm still not well enough, what I would consider well enough, to have my own child and to be left to my own devices with a child. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't hurt the child and I wouldn't neglect the child, but kids pick up behaviour, and I would want to be in a place where I could explain this, that and the other, unless there was a sort of a general support network. Even then, you know, I am a loner. I am a bit of a loner, and you know, I don't mind that. And that, but that wouldn't be fair on the kid. What if I was too anxious one day to go out to baby group, or you know, something important like sports day, where, you know, it's, I know parents work and it's not, people aren't always able to attend these things, but even, you know, having the time but not having the headspace, I don't know, that's not the way I would want to work. Respect to all the people that manage it and are able to have that kind of relationship with the child and such like that, but I think the thing is that I spent a lot of my teen years looking after my mum. I wouldn't say I was a carer, but I was definitely a therapist. She told me 2 years before she left Dad that she was leaving him, And I mean, she used to come into my bedroom and say, "Oh, if I left your dad, would you come with me?" And apparently, she did it. I spoke to my middle brother, and he said that she did it to him too. I don't. My eldest brother, when it comes to emotions, he's just switched off. He doesn't want to know. Whereas my middle brother and I, let's call him Brother G, he has gone through therapy, still going through counselling. He's gone through his own spiritual journey to reach where he is, and he's now training to be a counsellor. Well, no, a therapist, which is, again, hats off to him. And we've spoken about that history, and I think so. I guess from that point of view, it's that I've been there, and I haven't realised, I forgot about that. But yeah, I was the support when I needed the support, and I was angry about that for a long time, and I think that, I mean, now mother and I have got a better relationship. It's not perfect. She is still, sometimes she is still a potential trigger or brings negativity to my kind of general space, and I pick up on the way she's feeling, her stress, all that kind of thing. But now I'm able to be there for her, and she doesn't need the kind of support she did need, and she has returned the support in the sense that when I was in hospital, she tried to come see me every day. Now, other people made a lot of effort, don't get me wrong. My girlfriend at the time, she went out of her way to do her absolute best to come see me. Mum just, she tried her best to support me as much as she could. We ended up moving, because I just couldn't find anywhere stable to live. We ended up moving into the place we're at now. I do live with my mum, but we live in a house share at the moment, flat share. Yeah, but I don't know. That's just my view on the situation and my take. If you are inclined to write to argue, as in state an argument, not actually argue about it, present an argument, or just write to me about your opinion or experience regarding this from any viewpoint, you're welcome to email me at that bird with the bipolar at gmail.com. Yeah, so I promised I wouldn't witter on for longer than 30 or 40 minutes, so we've hit 38 minutes now, and I hope that at some point throughout the podcast I've actually managed to make sense. I'm pretty sure I've stuck to some kind of relativity in relation to each subject. Anyway, I shall try and do another podcast in this later in this week. I do have a few things going on, but oh, the result of the volunteer thing is that I have been basically thrown in the deep end. The woman who runs art group is away for a couple of weeks, so me and this guy have been put in charge of it. And don't get me wrong, I'm confident about it. I'm actually a little bit excited, but it's still like, the guy took me in and was like, "Right, well," because I know the woman who runs the group. Well, we've met for quite a few times. We've had quite a few conversations. She's a lovely woman. And she told him this situation. I came in from going to the toilet, and he was like, "Well, she is up for, she wants to get experience volunteering, and he's a volunteer, so do you two want to run it then?" And I was just like, and I was like, of course I was going to say yes. I'm not going to, if it means art group can't be run, you've got these people that come to this group for more reasons than just than being artists, to socialise and to talk and stuff. So, you know, I'm quite excited that I am able to do that a week after my initial meeting. So I've got another meeting with him 2 weeks today, where I need to take in forms for, I can't remember what it's called, but it's modern version of CRB check, and ID, and, you know, why I want to do volunteering, like application form basically. And he said to me, look, you, I don't care what you put there and there, but you, these are the important bits. So I was like, all right, so I fill that in, I'll take it all back with my ID, and I will be officially on their register. So, I mean, I think I'm going to, you know, in the meeting, I'm going to go back and be like, look, I think at first, a couple of hours a week is realistic. I said to him, I want to be able to make sure that I make a commitment and I can stick to it. So a couple of hours a week, and then if I can manage that, then maybe shadow two different sessions. There's a craft group, and it's one of the guys that I know, not well, but probably best out of the team, because he did the writing group, and he's off an art group, and I first met him 4 years ago, before he became a volunteer. Course facilitator. So right, yeah, and that's it. I shall give you updates on that situation. If I can't do a podcast this week, I'll try and do one next Tuesday after my first volunteering thing. We've got a list from the woman who manages it as to what to do, when to do it, blah blah blah, but I kind of shadowed her today. I asked lots of questions, because I can learn so much from reading it, but I learn best by doing it. So I did it. I did the tea break with her. I did the tidying up with her. I did, you know, where everything's got to go, what has got to happen, safety procedures, all kind of stuff like that. And I'm confident that it's going to be all right next week. So, I'm going to end it there, and, you know, don't forget, you can email me at thatbirdwiththebipolar@gmail.com, and I'll speak to you soon.